This is April 18th, 1995, my session with the Evergreen.
Greetings, Evergreen.
Greetings, ma'am.
I'd like to begin this session talking about the transition from not yet man to man. And is there a statement after that in that sequence?
Just after, yes.
Yeah, beyond man, I guess.
Yes.
Future. Now, I want to relate this to standard archaeological paleontological knowledge and have it corrected where necessary. In 27,000 BC, you have the alteration of the teeth.
Yes.
And that's the beginning of what became humans.
Yes.
That is the end of the not yet man phase.
Yes.
Yeah. Now how, I've been watching some TV programs on archaeology, and there's a controversy whether man began in Africa or Asia. Could the Evergreens tell us they're talking more or less about not yet man springing up, right? Before
yes.
20, maybe you could tell us how not yet man, where it geographically began, and then where did this alteration happen in 27,000 BC?
You see, both in Africa, but man, the not yet man, was a branch of Samian stock.
That's ape.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that as the stock branched and time moved, it was not that some moved towards tools and some did not. It was that because of the manner in which they ate, there was the necessity of, as any essentially grazing animal, to go where fruit ripens, where edibles are. And that if you would pattern how a group eats, you'll see that you can map its territory, you can map its necessity for defense, you can map its necessity for living and its patterns of living. Now, what happens here is that...
You're talking about not yet man still.
Not yet man, yeah. Yes. And needed a considerable amount of area, needed a considerable amount of hunting range, all of these things. Or not. That would find an area that was essentially productive. And because the numbers were relatively small and the demands upon the area were small, would have a tendency to be very localized. So there are basically two types of living pattern in various Samian. Now, as one branch began to develop, it was evident that the eating structure, food structure, necessities of food, could be altered. And by the alteration, would cause, across a length of time, a lifestyle change, a food difference, a gathering difference, a hunting difference. You see? Now, if you look at the majority of those animals that are on all fours, you will see that there is essentially a long tapered jaw with certain crushing abilities certain slicing abilities, but predominantly long and with the eyes offset. You see? Now, with the alteration of near man, so that the teeth structure would create a different jaw, then the structure of the jaw, and now note this because it's very important, allows the difference between all fours.
All fours of feet?
To use the arms as a form of locomotion. Now, if the proto-man spent much of his time as a simian, the function of the arms is a necessity to the function of the legs. That as soon as the function of the legs would shift and the shape of the pelvis would shift, and that the division between near man and more true man was this pelvic shift, this itself could not itself be engineered, but the processes that would allow it to be engineered could be engineered. And the easiest is the alteration of the teeth.
Now, you use the phrase proto-man. Is that not yet man?
That's not yet man.
Yeah. And near, and not yet man is near man, and then man.
Then man. You see, moving into this is that if you look at the teeth structure of those branches that remained simian, you would see that the development of the jaw, development of the lower portion of the skull, is predominantly long. If you look at man, it's predominantly short. Now, the shorter and shortening of the jaw altered the structure of the individual as a totality.
Okay, so that happens in 27,000 BC. Now, in normal archaeological history, paleontology, they have flint making happening 60,000 BC, 100,000 BC. Were
yes.
the simians using flints?
You see, yes, that certain branches were becoming more tool using. But you see,
were these branches all over the world or just in Africa?
Africa.
Right.
Choose the African because it will show that migration is after. Now, the point was
after the alteration.
After alterations. Now the point we're stressing is that yes, there were tools being used by certain, and these were copied because there was observance of it, but the tool was predominantly as a throwing tool, not particularly a tool-making tool itself, because still the use of the arms as a form of locomotion was dominant. And any species that would use all fours would have a tendency not to move towards accelerated tool development.
So the longer arms, you're saying, is pre-alteration man.
It's
right?
Yes. It's more to throwing
right.
than any other. But and to shape something to show, throw is not often common. But to once man began to develop, then he began to use tools, and the tools changed him.
The tools changed him?
Yes. But realize, first, it was the diet. The diet shifted considerably. Now, take a look at the jaw structure of a modern-day chimpanzee. A modern-day. You'll find the tooth structure is and more elongated. There are certain affinities with the great apes where there is a flattening, but still it is very slow, and these things that could have happened were developed faster, and because they developed faster, then the structure of the society shifted.
Right, now they, the Bhutis were looking at a particular stock of simian which had the advantage, or were they just looking at simians in general?
No, they were looking at those that had branched off, realizing that there was a branching.
Right.
And that certain would develop, certain had a tendency not. Oh, you know, all would across a length of time develop. How do you speed a development in one particular section of one particular species?
Right. Now, I have here Cro-Magnon man is a classification for 30,000 B.C. Would you agree with what scientists mean by Cro-Magnon man? So that's pre-alteration. They're talking Cro-Magnon. Do you think they mean man or not yet man, the regular scientists?
They're looking at the difference between Neanderthal
yes.
and Cro-Magnon. Now, Cro-Magnon, the timing of the Cro-Magnon is in the period that we are discussing. The Cro-Magnon is an extension of that beginning change.
Right, so I have here Neanderthal 60,000 BC. We should correct Neanderthal for after the alteration, 27,000.
No, before.
Oh, before.
Neanderthals are before.
So that matches with the standard definition.
Yes.
And they see Cro-Magnon as a new change, but they don't see that as a result of the alteration.
No, they do not.
But Cro-Magnon is the beginning of man.
Yes.
The alteration has set in.
Alteration has set in.
All right. Yeah, 30,000 B.C. for Cro-Magnon man. So that's only 3,000 years off from a general 27,000 B.C.
Yes.
All right, now the program I saw the other night is over the origins of man in North America. Did man come from Siberia over the Bering Strait, or were they already here?
That was much later. There was some... You have to understand that the Neanderthal had the propensity to be a traveler. But the problem with the Neanderthals is that their social groupings were mostly violent, and that pairing within the Neanderthal society was not evident. Now, there was traveling, but you see, what few realize is that land bridges have existed not only in the Bering, but because of certain situations, it can be done across the northern part from the east. Very difficult, but nonetheless can be accomplished. Now, when And there is something else that... We can tell you of one legend that, and this is an Inuit legend.
Yes.
That they came in silver ships.
Okay.
Now that can take a long time to explain. But the best description is those who would survive were moved. If you understand the Neanderthal, if you understand the division between the Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon, if you get into the shaping of these societies, you would see that the Neanderthal would have, if enough of them put in a certain area, would have destroyed each other. They were natural destroyers. Natural.
Yes.
They were very much destroyers of their own selves. Very much. Now, in certain sections of Cro-Magnon, this, but realize, if you shift people that have within themselves a change and put them in various areas, which ones survive?
So you're saying the Bodhis carried these newly transformed apes, simians and man, carried them to other parts of the world?
Yes.
To where? Where were they deposited? And from where?
In as much island masses that would be available, and so that there would be an ability of at least some of them surviving.
But where were they carried from and to where?
From various portions of Africa to various portions of the Americas and various portions of the larger landmass of China.
Right, so that is the beginning. That is the that's the spreading of man.
Yes.
That's the cause of the spreading.
Yes.
And it was done in silver ships?
Yes.
Well, UFOs, as we know. The UFOs that people see in the 80s and 90s occasionally, right?
Yes.
And they're making crop circles.
Yes.
So are Neanderthals regarded as simian?
No, they're a branch of.
It's sort of a later development of the simian thing you were talking about.
Yes.
But they're a branch, and it's before 27,000 B.C., but the what are called simian, they go back 100,000?
Much more.
Yeah. Look, in other words, standard evolutionary charting is relatively accurate if I put these adjustments in.
Relatively accurate.
Yeah.
But realize how long it took to establish from the Samian roots and the development within the Samian stock and the variances that existed and the length of time it took for the Neanderthal to develop from that stock.
How long was the stock developing? What span of years?
If you look very carefully at this, it's almost 250,000.
Right, and then the Neanderthal development is how many years, approximately?
That's what you
just asked. No, that's a simian.
It's a simian.
Oh.
The Neanderthal is approximately between 15 and 20,000.
Yeah, so you'd stretch it back from approximately 27,000
B to
50,000 BC,
yes.
Approximately.
Yes, and the Neanderthal began to breed true. Now, realize that the stock of Neanderthal was very small. That did persevere.
And that's only in Africa.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
So you won't find Neanderthal remains in North America?
No, you will not. you find other remains.
Yeah.
You mean Cro-Magnon remains?
Yes. You find very tall individuals that you will not find Neanderthal, not in North America.
Was Cro-Magnon black?
Cro-Magnon was black. Yes.
And but you can only find Cro-Magnon man around the world because he was moved to other parts of the world.
Yes.
And
plus there was a considerable amount of traveling.
Once they'd been moved or before?
During.
They would be moved and then they travel.
Yes.
Yeah. But how long would the moving process take? A month in human terms, time sense, or 2 weeks or 6 years?
A few days.
So it was like a zookeeper, you know, moving animals around, better grazing or something.
Better to see it as an opportunity to see if there is going to be a viability of cultures.
Right.
If you're going to have various petri dishes and you're going to find, will a culture survive in this environment or that environment, then you're looking at the probability of success is enhanced by the number of opportunities of survival. Now, if you look at the equatorial condition in the world itself, that there is a probability of survival. If placed within this equatorial area, where the food would be relatively abundant, and that there is not drastic changes of season as there would be as one moved further north or further south, so that the survivability is then enhanced. There are many factors in survivability, the basic raw survivability. One is, how can you make sure that this change of to be human, if this change, will it breed true? Will it give an opportunity to survive? Will it be able to survive in differing environments? Now, if you'd see that the difference between Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon is that the Cro-Magnon, in fact, became the top of the food chain. Because being able, hip structure enabled to stand upright, was able to move faster on 2 feet than could on 4, then could use speed and could use the arms for throwing, for shaping, tool making and the like, but adaptable. The adaptability of humans, because they're able to alter the environment through clothing, through housing, etc. It's that adaptability that is arranged for the survivability of the human, because then he could extend beyond the equatorial. But the Cro-Magnon, yes, the Neanderthal was not survivable. That's the point.
Right.
Realize the survivability of the Neanderthal was extremely low.
After the alteration in 27,000 BC, how many years later was it till the ships moved the altered simians, the altered Neanderthals?
Approximately 5,000.
So, yeah, talking about 22,000 BC is when the move happened.
Yes.
Right. And the Cro-Magnon, because his pelvic structure changed, he could move and really start running around the terrain.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So that took quite a while for that alteration to alter.
5,000 years.
Yes.
So, were they altered out in the Neanderthals, did you
from the strangeness of Neanderthal. Not all, because realize there were many differing strains of Neanderthal because of rapid interbreeding. As we say, pairing was not on a monogamous basis, and it was basically on a convenient animal basis, which kept the gene pool surprisingly open and flexible, because the female would have, let us suggest, six offspring, or one, or two, but all of them would be from high probability different parentage. This kept flexibility of the gene pool. Now, realize, and this is not to denigrate, this is to point at, the Neanderthals survived because they were vicious, they died because they were vicious. They survived because they were able to manipulate their environment sufficiently that they could vary their diet and they could protect certain areas in which food would be growing. Very territorial. But it is territoriality that has a tendency to be the lack of survival directed. It's unterritoriality that causes survival of a species. You see?
Yes. Can you, in modern map terms, say where in Africa this alteration happened and how many animals were altered? How many Neanderthals were altered?
Towards Kenya, towards East Africa, in those areas.
And how many alterations were done on individual members?
The entire Neanderthal population. Approximately 150,000. Yes.
And that took a month? What's the time span of the work to do that?
2 years.
All right.
What was involved in this alteration?
Oh, yeah, that's what I wanted to add to it. I remember reading it, an old Evergreen's reading. Wasn't something done to the wrist in an old transcript? I remember that.
Yes.
What was that?
That was altering the movement of the wrist.
Is that done genetically? Like the teeth were altered genetically, you would say, or molecularly?
The teeth are altered into the forward structure of DNA. Forward structuring is repositioning certain teeth and inspecting the form to breed that in the following generation. That's forward DNA work.
Now the wrist?
Same thing.
All right.
But the teeth were more important.
Yes. Well, the previous reading they talked about how easy it was once you knew the technology, but was it on the resonance level?
No, it's on it's partially mechanical. If you were to move teeth, it's not that hard when you know how.
Is it done by injections?
Infusions, yes.
What do you mean in infusions?
And the best description is that terminology is inexact because there is no present-day terminology to form this. But the...
Was there a technology that touched the ape, the Neanderthal? Was there any contact? You know what I mean?
As far as Neanderthals were concerned, with only certain branches of the Neanderthals, so a majority of them now.
No, what I meant was that the technology that was used by the Boudians, it had touched the bodies of the Neanderthals when they did them.
Well, yes.
You said, oh, and then yes.
In the touching, yes.
Yeah, so there was some apparatus.
Yes.
All right. Now, in that old reading, it was this operation of the wrist, they said, created the subconscious in us.
It was part of. If you would say that any alteration of a species that breeds true, and if you know from prior knowledge what shifts are going to be done from an alteration, then you would see that the functions of the organism as a totality alter, which would include the thinking processes, which would include even to the uses of the mind, that the mind would shift into the bicameral. But first, there must be the creation of an opportunity to do it. You see, if you were to take a great ape these days, a gorilla, of the gorilla family, and you find a way of teaching that gorilla to use a typewriter, but first you must have him understand what the keys are. Not only that it can be depressed and that there would be an impression made on paper, but what is an A? What is a B? Why is the necessity of an A, a B, and a C? Why is that there an alphabet? So you go back one step. And you keep on going backwards and backwards until you can make a small change that would have a significant point. But then the gorilla would ask for a typewriter, or would think of a typewriter, or would invent a typewriter. But you just go back, you see. It's not so much as teaching the great ape Anslam that he would be able then to show his words with hand motions. You have, of course, changed great apes forever if you teach enough great apes that they teach their children and their children teach their children, and they begin to then form an expansion, an addition to the original that they were taught, and they become highly adept at sign language. Now, consider this. If you take the great ape, teach this great ape sign language, and at the same time alter the DNA of the great ape so that sign language becomes a dominant factor, within a number of generations, the great ape will have an extensive sign language. Now, from that, several things. His mind would have shifted. He would no longer spend as much time on his four legs, because you would need them for talking, communicating. So you then had a tendency to stand upright more often. And different pressures would be placed on the pelvis. And across a number of generations, a number of shifts, there would be an upright gorilla.
Right.
But How long were you willing to wait? If you were going to wait for a Neanderthal to work into the thinkingness that would allow surviving, then not only would you wait a long time, there is no time for the Neanderthal, because the Neanderthal dies out. He does not have the capability. It was not that the Cro-Magnon forced out the Neanderthal. The Neanderthals were vicious. They could survive. They could fight. But they could not think. And it was the Cro-Magnons that outthought them. Left, right, and center.
Did they fight each other at some point?
The Cro-Magnons had a tendency to run away because they were faster.
So, in this transition period, the man has arrived, and it now has to interact with the not-yet-man, but the not-yet-man gradually dwindles.
Yes.
So at first, they had to hide from not-yet-man's violence.
Yes.
Yes. That's neat. All right, when were the famous Lascaux cave drawings done? Lascaux?
Yes, yes. But these are approximately 20, these are 19,000.
So it's, did the society, why were they done in caves? At the
mystery. No, it's very, very evident. You are protected in a cave system. Always, you're better protected in a cave system when you are out in the open.
Were these cave drawings prayers to get animals to come for hunting, or were they rituals?
They were a part of the ritual of the life that more expressed continuance. You see,
wasn't for hunting?
To a degree, hunting. But to a degree as a language that was more understood as time goes by. That
in our time or among them?
Among them.
Yeah.
You see that with a petroglyph, you can give a picture. If you're in a society that is ideographic, then pictures become very important because they supply and imply information. In an information necessity society, you will find that there is a language. Depend upon the need of information. And the need of information within those groupings was here, yes, there, no. Maps were not even thought of. As a planar view, a map was a horizontal view. So these are, in part, maps. But the terminology is very different than that which you would buy from an ESOC map.
Did they have ESP, these people at the 19,000 BC?
Yes. They were intuitive, because it was either survive or not. Those who have the tendency towards muscular development, a food gathering ability, a lack of injury, a propensity to heal quickly, a propensity to not catch certain illnesses, there would be a stronger immune system and the like, that the intuitive function was also a survival function. The intuitive, and let me assure you, the Neanderthal was lacking in intuition. While the Neanderthal lacked in intuitiveness, made up in viciousness.
All right, now the Cro-Magnon man develop burial rituals, or were Neanderthal men doing burial rituals or some kind of burial rites?
Neanderthal burial rites were rudimentary, to say the least, because they did not bury. They would put the deceased out of the way. It's because of a convenience. But you see, a person who is cast of clay in your society is an object of burial. In a Neanderthal society, it's a source of food. And so the burial functions of the Neanderthals was get the body out of the way and oftentimes eat it.
Yes.
So now realize that, and this has been shown in more recent studies of cannibalism, that what would appear to be the best portions of the human body are the parts of the body that have the most toxins in them. Now, not that the Neanderthals lived in a toxic society, far from it, but they did live in a society where certain diseases did exist, and many of these affected the brain. And the brain, as delicious as it could be, was oftentimes that which caused problems within those that did eat brain. So, from that, the Neanderthals would cut the head off, save the head. So therefore it became a head-saving society. Not all of it, some. The rest was edible. Now, it was not that the Cro-Magnon had any greater ethics as concerned to death, but that the Cro-Magnon ate better and there was not the necessity of cannibalism, though cannibalism did exist in the early Cro-Magnon. You will only have a burial concept in a society when you do not need the bodies for food.
I'm going to rewind it. This pulsing sound, some of the discs had this pulsing sound. The guy who dubbed it, I don't know why that happens, but that's a problem later into these discs. It seems to start pulsing, but you seem to be able to make it out. I want to rewind that, get a better transition.
You will only have a burial concept in a society when you do not need the bodies for food. Any society that could form its own means of accomplishing a variety of foods does not then view the human body as a source of available protein.
So the burial, the idea of a religious burial, as we understand it, a sense of a sacred memory comes in with Cro-Magnon man.
Yes, and much later becomes important. You see, one of the aspects of the Neanderthals was that they were linked very tightly in small, very small territorial groupings. If they could live within a particular grove of trees, they would live within that grove of trees because they would be able to eat, there would be certain weather protection, etc., etc. The Cro-Magnon had a tendency to move outwards. They were not as territorially designed, nor did the societies reflect, but there was still territoriality in it.
Okay,
now notice that if you bury your ancestors in the ground, you own the ground. That was the reason for the burial processes of the Cro-Magnons. But if you bury the wise in an area, you own the area. It's yours.
The wise being W-I-S-E?
W-I-S-E, yes. The older ones.
Right.
The ones who survived and were able to teach, were able to fashion better tools. These ones when they cast off clay, rather than use them as available food, they were used as position markers in a territorial area of large territory. And you will find that the concept of sacred ground is the concept of territory.
And also ancestor worship.
Ancestor worship is territory.
Right.
And claims to territory.
Right. Okay. I have an interesting question. The entity, the consciousness that's in the Cro-Magnon man, when it dies, does it become aware of all its lives as we think now of humans? And
yes.
Really?
Yes.
Is that when that began?
No, long before this.
So when a Neanderthal died, the entity, the consciousness within a Neanderthal, that violent thing, would come out, and if they're, and they would go through the death process that I will go through, the same thing, and become aware of their kind of spirit lives.
Of course.
Now that's interesting, isn't it?
Absolutely, because you see, you must understand that, that if you look at the totality of yourself as a spiritual entity, of all of your existences, then you would view the Neanderthal and say, yes, that was a viciousness. There's no other word for it but vicious. But that's what a Neanderthal does. You don't expect the Neanderthal to lift his teacup with his little finger raised. Because, well, it's not that there were no teacups. It was that the concept of interactiveness at that more modern level was not even a concept.
They did correlate with, they ate the brains of the person who was dead, that they got sick.
Yes. They were not fools, but they were not sent for survival.
Right. So when spirit in earlier millennia inhabited Iraq and was a rock for millions of years, and then it would have to remove itself from the rock.
Yes.
And then it would be a consciousness that says, oh, I have all these lives, and I've just sort of put myself in that little terrestrial prison to see what it was like.
Yes.
I see. And that goes back to the whole time stuff we've done in previous readings.
Yes.
All right. Now, I'd like to, since only a while left, I'd like to, here, I have a question. Should I ask about wave sign, the wavelength theory, like Dardic, and how that relates to spiral design, or should I ask, in relevance to this reading, for a description of the Bhutis, how they look? You've given it in old readings, but they're blonde. They look like white people, I think you said, when they interacted with the South Americans.
Yes, but they're also black when they interacted with the Africans.
They can change their features?
They can change their appearances necessarily.
Oh, so it's science fiction like the Bhutians.
Yeah.
So
if you would see the Bhutians as chameleon...
Shapeshifters.
Not shapeshifters.
Chameleons.
More chameleon-like.
They adapt to who they're communicating with.
Very much so.
So...
because their society is based on this necessity of communications. Now, consider this. You're an educated person. Well, you have a good vocabulary. That's more than adequate, far more than adequate of the normal, quote, normal person. You have a need for an extensive vocabulary. Certain others do not. If you'd hear your ability to describe something, and a certain less educated person describing something, your description would be recognizable and cognizable, while a person of lesser education would create a relatively confusing description. Now, to the Bhutians, that is the greatest sorrow of all times, that a person does not have an extensive vocabulary and an extensive grammar. Bhutian grammar is not complex, but is extremely rich. And the vocabulary, the best description is, you know that the Inuit have many names for snow because they have many needs of many names because of conditions and the need to travel. If you would see that that concept carried into all things, there you would find basically the Boothian philosophy. The communication level can be easily manipulated downwards, very, very hard upwards. So therefore, they are at a peak of communication and communication skills. The additional aspects of communication are travel and movement of individuals. So naturally, from where the Boothians themselves were, to give a gift of travel, to give a gift of communication, this was the greatest gift that they could give. Because it replicated their needs. But they were wise enough to realize that this is a different place.
Yes. When we have contact with them, will they speak English to us?
Yes, of course. English, Swahili, Chinese, Russian, all of these are variants on communication. And all one needs is to learn the grammar and the words. And if you are adept, then it takes no time to learn another language.
So are they going to look relatively like us? I think in the old readings, the evergreens described the Boothians as bifurcated.
Yes.
What did that mean in that particular?
They are upright, walk on their hind legs. They do not use their forelegs for locomotion.
You mean they walk like us?
Yes.
Yeah. And they will have skin the same texture as we have for this meeting?
Somewhat.
Now,
you see, if it mattered, then they would. But if a society reaches a point where it doesn't matter, then you will accept an ambassador that is purple.
Right. In other words, they will adapt themselves within limits of what they think we can stand.
Yes.
But they want to be a little different, so we have a sense that they are something exotic from far away.
To a degree. But realize that one of the objectives of any civilization, and this is true of all civilizations and not on this world, all civilizations need to grow to the point where there are no strangers. So at the basic philosophy and the philosophical level, there are no strangers.
Right.
There are none. So therefore, as this society grows more and more towards realizing there are no strangers, then you can accept strangers. Because they're no longer strangers. They're but partners from a different place.
Right, and we... So I'm getting images of popular science, Star Trek kind of, someone who can change shape. I mean, they're not the real science fiction images of that mindness, a beehive, I can't remember, from the blob or something, the glorp, that's some kind of part in the Star Trek script. The what? Yeah, it's. But we, as we get to know them, we will start to see how they are chameleons and how they can.
And how they differ.
And how they dematerialize themselves, if they want to.
Oh, it's a technology. And technology is technology and easily learned. But the point is, if they are accepted as the way that they demonstrate themselves, and that this then progress, then you find how vastly different other societies can be. Vastly different.
Yes.
Based upon things that would seem to make absolutely no sense, but they work.
So that they will unfold them, what they are, over time.
Yes.
Yeah.
You see, if you look at popular science fiction, it's an extension of what is here.
Yes.
It does not show the absolute strangeness that exists there, but only when you can accept that strangeness can you be a part of it.
When you say the strangeness there, you mean in the universe or in the
universe?
In the universe. Yeah.
The strangeness. One person had it correct when he said, it's not only wilder than your imagination can think, it's wilder than that.
All right.
There's approximately 1.5 minutes.
All right, then. You got a question, Ellie? Let me think. When did the Ice Age end?
Between 7,000 and 9,000 years before the coming of the Nazarene.
It
depends upon if you look at the majority of the when there was a retreat of the ice cap that then began to expose more. You find that is between 7,000 and 11,000 years. It varies from place to place to place.
Right. Are the Boodians interested in Irving Dardick's theory of cycles? Do they think that will lead into their kind of thinking?
It's not that they're interested in any particular thing. What they're interested in is the totality of where does a society go that survives. They knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the Neanderthals would die out. The opportunities that would be created for the Cro-Magnon in different areas. Some would live, some would not. But the probability of survival was then improved. This society is still in its probabilities. Will this society survive? We say it does, because we see that it does. But mankind must reach a point where he can see that there are no strangers. Does that theory work towards this area? It's part of it.
When a Bootian dies, he goes into the same spirit I go into when I die.
Yes, and you realize then that there is then from that a strangeness.
Yeah, because we and spirit have not talked to their souls in spirit, I understand. There's no communication between their heaven, so to speak, and our heaven.
There are and there aren't.
Yeah, we will now that we will make contact, it will begin, but up to this point there has not been.
Now we see what there has been. What we see is, it's a mind is a mind. It's trying to grasp what that mind is. A spirit is a spirit. They are not cookie-cuttered. They are the products of existence. But if there is no common ground, if there is no basis of formation in which there can be even discussion, there must be an agreement as to the language and what the language means.
But
and some of that information is of no use in this particular spiritual state. Some of it is. That has to be worked out. And now this must end.
I just wanted to ask one thing. You had started to struggle, I guess, to find the words to describe the technology of the genetic alteration. And could you leave a trigger with Michael?
Yes.
Please, thank you. Okay, well, unless there's any further comments, shall we end the session?
Please.
Thank you. Dear Lord, please enfold these entities in thy love and thy perfection. Amen. Please clear any negative influences from these entities now.
Done.
Allow the body to become completely relaxed, to perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal, naturally, and begin returning all other systems of the body to normal, naturally, now.
Done.
Thank you for our session and for the love.
We do thank you. To you both. God's blessing.
Thank you, Green. Same to you. And now I would like Michael to awaken feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, and loved now.
came out of that session, I had to ask Bob, was it this session, any previous session, when I gave Bob standing next to a Neanderthal in a museum setting. It was just a mock-up, and I was scared out of my wits, and saying, if you knew what this guy was like, you wouldn't be within 150, 200 feet of the guy, and you'd be running away, because they're dangerous.
And there are museums with those statues. Yeah, I don't know if I've seen any. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think anthropological museums have, you know, this is a Neanderthal, this is a Cro-Magnon, this is a whatever.
But somehow a topic came up, you had this impression, you're like dreaming that you could see what they were.
Yeah, I could see what they were.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing is, and it came out of this particular session, with seeing a group of Neanderthals. And they had a grove of trees and grasses, and it was about, I'd say about 10 acres, something like that, covered 10 acres. Eating was pretty good. Well, there was nuts and berries and this sort of thing, and grasses. They ate a lot of grass, They were almost foragers. They were almost bovine. They didn't have to bring up a cud or anything like that. But they ate a lot of fiber, a lot of cellulose, sort of thing, a lot of it.
Did they excrete all over the place? Was there any, did you notice, was there any toiletry?
Well, it was like any other area. You don't foul your own nest.
Right.
But you... it's not that clean. I mean, it was clean-ish, but I'd say that modern day pigs have if you give a pig enough area, they'll all have a tendency to crap in one area and keep things clean that way. But somewhat like that.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that the Neanderthal had about the intelligence of a pig. About that. It was not very bright at all. Saw that.
And they look like as we imagine, these sort of ape-like guys.
Yeah, they were predominantly, very powerfully ape-like. But the apes themselves were shifting. They were long-nosed apes, long-jawed apes, should I say, long-jawed apes. And they were shorter-jawed apes. And it was the shorter-jawed apes that became the Neanderthal. And then from Neanderthal, changes in that. Now, how do you describe...
You saw this group with the trees.
I saw this group on the trees, and they foraged out of it. But they tried to stay in that area as much as they could. They were extremely... you move into that area, you're dead.
Yeah.
That's dead. If you're not a part of that grouping...
If you're another Neanderthal tribe?
If you're another Neanderthal coming into that area, there's no Pax Romana or Pax Neanderthalis. It's all, that's it.
That's the stranger theme that at the end of the reading.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a stranger from the beginning.
Oh, yes.
You were nailed.
Nailed and fried. chomped on.
Did you see them eating skulls or avoiding the skulls and all that?
They were there. They would take protein. They weren't that great protein eaters, I have to tell you that. They were not. Their gut was more associated to cellulose. And fiber to a greater extent. I mean, the appendix was fully functioning. I mean, not the little vestigial thing that we have. They had a fully functioning appendix that enabled them to eat cellulose.
Now, could you see the innards?
Uh-huh.
I mean, or you just...
No, I just knew that.
You just know.
I was looking at it. Yeah. I said to myself, my God, these guys eat a lot of grass.
Yeah.
Leaves. You know, they ate ferns and all that stuff. How's that? The Cro-Magnon, now, how did I do this? Because I saw something very different. I have to say a machine, and I'm wrong.
Yeah, okay.
I saw a machine that in the light that came off this machine, things became malleable. Okay, I could then move things which were not able to be moved otherwise. In other words, if I shone the light on this microphone that I have here, I could rearrange it with my fingers, draw it out.
Oh, it would become plastic. It would
become
putty.
It would become plastic. It would become malleable. Yeah.
And you touch it and shape it.
And shape it under this light.
Yeah.
Now, under this light, you could also move flesh. You could move flesh and bone. And it's exceptionally good for setting a bone if you want to. If you've got a broken bone, you can set it. But they did it, and they were some peoples. I think the Bhutians, I think I'll have to say that. They shone this light, and they moved the jaw.
With their hands, they pushed things around with the machine.
Not necessarily, they didn't use their hands. The whole damn thing was done by the machine, almost to a pattern.
Right.
Programmed in the pattern.
It would move the material.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Move the material of the jaw, and then imprint in it. This is where you're. This is where.
Return
to this. Nothing. You don't go back to this. This is now.
This is the mold. They release it. Would go back to where it was, and it would grow towards that.
And it would grow towards it, and it would. Well, it would. No, it would be mostly shaped. There'll be little growth left. But what happens then is that it's then in the structure of the DNA. How long do you think they lived? If they lived to 25 years old, and we're talking ancient lives here.
Yeah.
19 was, by the time you get about 19, you're getting old. The number of generations, we figure what now, 25 years is a generation, this was about, less than 15, because the females, as soon as the females came into heat, they were pregnant. I mean, that was it. I mean,
they'd be around 11 and 12, I guess.
Sooner. Yeah, but you know, they came into heat and were pregnant, and that was where it was. But the thing about it was the Cro-Magnon was growing straighter. He was growing straighter, and he was quite straight. And the brain capacity, his food intake shifted. He wasn't eating grasses. He was eating much wider variety of foods. And because he was having such a wide variety of foods, he had more area to cover. He was literally by that necessity. And that, believe it or not, is, okay, to me, that is the expulsion of from the Garden of Eden. Because everything was supplied in the Garden of Eden.
The Garden of Hell.
Yeah, the Garden of Hell, yeah. But the Garden of Eden had everything supplied.
Right, within their needs.
Within their needs. And then they ate of what they should not have eaten, and then they were cast out of Eden. That's, you know, the biblical part. But then from Neanderthal, which is more Edenish, you know, staying within specific 10-acre, 20-acre areas, very, very small groupings, very small. Then moving into much larger territories because your diet shifted.
They developed new needs, therefore they need more satisfaction, which was harder to find.
Which was
to work harder to meet the need.
More gender. And they began to not depend on circumstance for food. They began to then track food. They began to move more into a protein diet.
Looking at animals, killing them.
Yeah, as a source of food. The Neanderthals didn't kill that many. They did on occasion, but it was rare. It was only done in, really, it was done because they had to.
Very
literally, you know.
Our popular images of Neanderthals clubbing animals is actually erroneous.
It's Cro-Magnon.
I don't know if they say Neanderthal technically did it in fine knowledge.
Yeah, but the Neanderthals were
body.
Yeah.
But the Neanderthals were brutish because that was the way it was.
Yeah.
And vicious because they were rather benign. But they didn't have the seeds of success within themselves, even though they led to the Cro-Magnons. The Neanderthals died out because
they were left behind. In a sense, back in their thing.
Genetically left behind.
Well, they die because they starve to death or something, or they, yeah, probably climate change.
They couldn't
move.
They couldn't adapt.
Yeah. Yeah, the Cro-Magnons, because they were forced into why the turtles had to adapt, and they had the means to adapt because they could eat better.
And they could think about what to do about the problem.
Yeah. Kill, eat.
Saw that. Another Neanderthal, any kind of tools.
They were throwing stones.
They were throwing stones
and sticks.
Yeah, they would throw up here.
Oh, yes, anything would throw, because they did extend their reach.
Yeah.
You know, throwing is extending the reach.
But then Cro-Magnon and then started to shake things.
Oh, he started to shake things. Then he began to realize not only the throw could drop, and, you know, the drop was out of a tree. You could take a rock off a tree and drop it.
Ah.
You got something. You know, you can use gravity as a point of view. You don't have to throw, you can rock something 20
feet. So they got the path of least resistance, you know, that physics principle they had thought they could do less effort and accomplish more. Yeah.
One of the things about Diane, a very interesting thing, is that because their diet changed, they had more than enough energy. They could expend energy because they had more energy to do more than just survive it. They could survive, eat, and have energy left to do certain other, sometimes simple projects. So they weren't spending as much as their day in eating.
Which the Neanderthals were.
The Neanderthals were. And the Neanderthals, very much. I was looking at a great ape. And the great ape was there, and he was nibbling almost all day.
But the great ape was not a Neanderthal.
No, great ape is not a Neanderthal. That's what we have. We have, gorillas, great gibbons and all those things. They spend a lot of time sitting in one place. I mean, food. You don't have enough food. You literally do stick very close to your food source.
That's what you see on the Neanderthals developed over that. Great ape.
They just didn't have the survival. But what is strange is, I don't know how, but there's two things that I know are going to be found. They found that, possibly, they're talking about Jurassic Park, in which they found some DNA. Well, since the making of the movie, they have found some DNA.
Yeah, I think I've heard that.
Now, there's three things here. One is that we're going to find some DNA of the early Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons. We're going to find it. It's a fact. It's difficult, but we're going to find it. And the other one is that somewhere in our DNA is now the instructions that are partly Neanderthal and partly Cro-Magnon.
What do you mean by that?
That information that was Cro-Magnon, which was Neanderthal, and which bred Neanderthals, with the dominant chunk of the DNA, it's still there. It's no longer dominant. We still have some of those Neanderthal genes in us. We still have some of the Cro-Magnon genes in us at the DNA level on the strand.
We have Neanderthal genes, and then we have the altered genes of the Cro-Magnon.
Yeah, we have them all stored inside us. And that's one of the areas I think it could be extremely exciting across the next several years, is realizing what all of these chunks of the DNA are there for, because a lot of this stuff on the normal DNA strand is not used. We look at it and say, well, that's junk. No, it isn't. It's information of the entire history of ourselves as beings on this planet. Entire history.
Okay, that's it. Oh, well, here, the instrument, did you see the being holding the instrument, or you just saw this light instrument?
It was like, I wasn't concentrating so much on them. That was to be very interesting. I was very, very interested in the whole.
And why would you say it's not a machine? Since it was sort of serial kind of machine.
It's almost like a
flashlight without the handle.
It's a flashlight without the handle or the bulb.
Right.
Or the reflector.
No hardware. That's what you're trying to say.
The hardware concept is
a little like a glow.
It's almost like a virtual reality machine. It exists because I had it there as an existence.
Right, and no hardware around it.
Don't need hardware. Well, the thing about it is, the concept of distance, I don't have to think of it in a bank because I can go back on this world. I don't have to need to carry tools with me to fix my craft. Not because it doesn't break down, but because my craft is every distance, is an equal distance from home or wherever it is.
Oh, wow. Neat.
Okay, now when we were asking for the script and the booties, did you see them?
No. No, what I did see was I was looking at the commandments. I was very, 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 very interested.
Where did you go back?
Who?
The commandments.
Really? Dark brown.
But the
not as much hair as the animals.
We've had a description of the booties in this reading, but you didn't see them.
No, I didn't.
Do you think it's blocked from you to see them?
I don't know.
Did you see
them? Did you ask? I don't know. I was not looking at them. I was looking at the Neanderthals. I was looking at them saying, I felt sorry for the little buggers.
Yeah, now, that's what I wanted to ask. You're watching them. What are you, a head as a camera? You're not among them because they would know you, you know.
No. One time in the past, we did a session about Neanderthals. It was strictly from an art point of view for somebody who's interested in our field. And I remember that I was watching this guy make marks on a wall. And I got really interested in him. I leaned forward, and he sensed me, and he turned around. I mean, he turned around like he spun on a dime zone and spun. And he spun around in a defensive position. And I couldn't see, because he sensed me.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, I'm sorry, he couldn't be Neanderthal. He had to be Cro-Magnon because the...
this is the Lascaux cave drawing?
Kind of stuff? Yeah, this is cave drawings.
And is it not in this reading?
No.
Another reading.
This was another one time ago. And I noticed how thick his nails were. The Cro-Magnons had very, very thick nails. But they began to thin as they went along.
Right.
And which, as they began to thin, and they weren't as claw-ish because they no longer had the need to claw-ish.
Right.
They had a need to use that hand as a grasping tool, a shaping tool, and etc. And claws get in the way.
Right.
In fact, one of the reasons we have thinner nails now is not because of anything. We don't need claw. We're quite able to use mind to do what we want to, not claw to what we want to.